The Goal Line Club once again brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. And Ryan, we're down to the final few games of the Gopher season, two to be exact. And the number of events are waning in this current season, but there could be potentially off-season events as well. So take advantage of them now. Obviously, the tailgate, and there will also be some of these luncheons coming up, Ryan.
Yes, including one on Friday, November the 26th, and it'll be Mike Grimm, the play-by-play voice of your Golden Gopher football team, is the MC. Justin Consemius, the Fargo Flash, will be there, along with a fan favorite at linebacker here in recent memory, Thomas Barber, plus a Golden Gopher football coach will walk you through a little bit of a presentation in terms of what's going on with either the offense or the defense. So if you want to go to that, it's a luncheon Friday the 26th. I believe it's at LC's. Go to goalineclub.org/GLC events.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to Here We Go Again, as once again, Minnesota has plenty of opportunities in the second half to win a rivalry game. And once again, the Gophers cannot get over the hump as they fall in Kinnick Stadium 27-22. In what is going to be potentially a monumental game for hopeful change on the offensive side of the ball. And joining us, as always, to break it down is my second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. Derek, I will let in the audience on my drive home last night from Kinnick, which, oh, by the way, was incredibly icy and a terrible decision, but I did get home. Derek and I spent a lot of time venting together about what we saw. And Derek, I can tell you it was very cathartic, because I believe this episode should be titled A Therapeutic Davenport of Love and Support for this program. And how are you, Derek?
I'm doing well today. It was good chatting yesterday. You know, the closer you are, I think, to the game in terms of timing, the more emotional I think it is. So a lot of emotion yesterday, but sat down and went through the game this morning, as I know you did as well, and ready to talk some college football.
All right, let's just get right into this. I'm going to read off some numbers to you, and I assume you're already familiar with these, but probably more surprising is that the Gophers ended up losing this game. So on the day, the Gophers had 409 yards of total offense, 220 yards passing, 189 yards rushing. They had 23 first downs to Iowa's 12. Iowa had 277 yards of total offense, 206 through the air, and only 71 on the ground. And guess what? The Gophers won the take give, and they had 40 minutes of time of possession to Iowa's just about 20. Yet here we are, and the Gophers lost. I tweeted this after the game, and I'm sure we'll get into this more, but man, if you aren't able to capitalize on your opportunities and you play the time of possession formula like the Gophers have, you end up in these sticky situations where, well, you couldn't capitalize and now you lost, even though all the stats are in your favor. So, guys, as we jump into this, it was a good to see the Gophers offensive line bounce back. I think that's probably the one positive that we can try and start with. They bounced back. They were able to run the ball. We saw some wrinkles in the run game. But at the end of the day, it just wasn't enough. So, Derek, what did you see in that run game, especially that brought improvement from the Illinois game?
Well, I think actually both lines I felt like really did bounce back from a physicality standpoint. So you're right. That was really nice to see, a rivalry game coming off a very disappointing performance against Illinois. Again, from a physicality standpoint, I don't think that was the issue for the front seven on either side of the ball. But specifically on offense, as everybody who watched the game picked up quickly, the Gophers added a significant wrinkle in the running game with a toss outside zone play. And actually what looked like one play was actually two different plays off that toss action. When running it to the strong side, it was nothing different than a stretch outside zone play. So I don't want to bring up bad memories, but it was really blocked essentially the same as what Illinois ran against the Gophers a week ago. So that stretch zone play where really the idea is not to take it outside, it's to stretch things out and then find the cutback. So that was one version of the toss that the Gophers ran. And the other was the weak side toss, which was basically an influence play. So the Gophers, if it's a toss to the right, for example, are real essentially running inside zone to the left with their front blocking. Now, what this does, of course, is it gives the inside linebackers a false look. You get them reading inside zone, which gets you leverage on the weak side toss to get outside. So, you know, really nice to see that wrinkle added. The Gophers were able to do what really nobody else has done the whole season against Iowa, which is find something in the running game. And as frustrating as it was in the passing game, which I know we'll talk about, we do have to admit, or at least I'll admit, very creative and very successful game planning and execution in the running game.
And this is exactly what we wanted to see from the Minnesota Moving Company up front. Is Coe Keefe, the Iowa native, has a sensational game. Not only run blocking, but they're able to find him on the wide dump play action from the Cole Kramer package for the touchdown, which was very dicey there at the goal line. The more I watched and watched and watched that back, and they probably should have had a second touchdown on the first drive, but in the run game, they bounced back. And to Derek's point, they showed something that they haven't all year with the toss play. And I think the interesting part about it is, from kind of sleuthing behind the scenes, this is a toss play they've been working on all year. They just haven't showed it until this game. And so it's like, did they just want to show it against Iowa so that Iowa doesn't know how to react? Because, I mean, it worked. He ran for 200-something yards against Iowa, which no one really has done all season, and you were winning in the trenches, which, again, credit to Schluter and Olsen and John Michael Schmitz and Blaze Andrews, Coe Keefe, Dana Faalele, because they were winning the battle up front most of the game. It's why Minnesota's offense was able to drive between the 30s. But that's where the positivity ends for me, other than the running backs. I thought Kai Thomas and Bucky Irving played really well. Again, you're on your running back five and your running back six in Kinnick, and they're breaking tackles and they're showing patience in that toss play, because how many times did we see them go toss left and those guys are patient enough where then, you know, they get vertical and then they get lateral, make a guy miss and turn a 2 or 3 yard gain into a 6 or 7. I mean, I can't say enough good things about what Kenny Burns has done for that running back room. When you are where you're at on the depth chart this time of the year, I think Kai Thomas and Bucky Irving have showed kind of what they've been able to do. It's encouraging going into the future. And that's where, again, to Derek's point, whoever the run game coordinator is, I mean, 16 thumbs up, because you did something against the Hawkeye defense that really hadn't been done all year. And then we can get into the passing offense and the Fleck ball mentality. But again, to your point, Luke, I mean, credit to credit's due. The guys up front definitely bounce back.
Yeah, before we go to the passing game, Derek, I just have one question for you. I, again, will never claim to be an elite offensive line mind. Just a couple of things that I noted, and the one is, you know, we've talked about this previously on the podcast, especially when you're running outside zone. You know, I mean, you've argued that you could almost call holding on every single play. I was curious on that Faalele holding. I know he got him turned, but you know, that ended up being the first penalty. I guess I confess, I don't know, but I didn't see a hold there. Maybe I'm just naive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I Ryan and I did talk about that actually after the game as well. I think that there probably was holding initially, because frankly, there is on any zone running play, you lock up with a guy and you're taught to hold inside to grab inside the shoulders. But the question is, was the hold long enough that it impaired that defender from making the tackle? And I guess what I would argue is that he did see it late. He saw the cut outside late and tried to release. I don't think he would have been able to make the tackle had Daniel not been locked up with him. So I guess what I'm saying is, I don't think it affected the play. I don't think the call was necessary. But, you know, to be fair and give myself a little bit of an out here, I don't think we got a really good angle on it either. So sure. I would probably lean towards a borderline no call on it. But, you know, to your point, Luke, is there holding on, you know, there really is holding on pretty much any zone play. So you could, if you decide to, and the ref sees it, he could probably call that anytime he wants.
Yeah, I guess for me, the thing that it's difficult is, like, you know, it was a really clean game up until that point. I didn't think he got a competitive advantage there. I thought the running back was well by him, but okay, I was just curious. And the other one that I want to touch on, just from a pass blocking kind of an officiating standpoint, was we know how much the Gophers really struggle with stunts, right? They've struggled to pass off players in the stunts. But on the, I'm going to forget 97's last name. Ryan, what's 97's last name?
Well, it was, are you talking about the sack?
Yes.
Late in the fourth quarter there, where Logan Lee holds Connor Olsen.
Yes.
And then Van Valkenburg twists around.
Yeah, because that looks like a blatant hold. And I know that they're kind of taught to try and hold too, but that was so blatant and bad. Like, that literally gave the competitive advantage on the sack. Now, I recognize that plays are missed all the time, but just from your opinion, Derek, that was a blatant hold, right?
Derek, can I just say how well Luke is learning? Like, Luke knew, like, that was it's so funny.
I've never blocked anyone in my life, right? Never.
No, but it's funny because, again, Derek and I talked about it last night, and Derek, I think you're just going to reiterate what he just said, is that's something that Iowa has taught their defensive linemen to do.
Yep, you're spot on, Luke. Yes, it was, and they are taught to do that. Essentially, that's the umpire's call. The head referee can make that call as well. The only thing I would say is it's not often called, but it had obviously a direct impact on that play. I think it's fair to say that twist would have been picked up without it. So, you know, if they're not going to call it and I was being taught to do that, they're going to continue to just to get away with it. So unfortunate that it was missed and ended up having an impact.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the passing game then. Sorry, I just needed to nerd out on some offensive line stuff because I'm still learning, you know, having never played the position, having never blocked anyone in my life. Many people blocked for me, but I never blocked in my life, so I don't have the slightest idea. I have no idea what leverage is. Okay, getting into the passing game. On the day, Tanner Morgan, 14 of 30, 189 yards, one touchdown, monster touchdown throw. Cole Kramer, 1 for 1, 37 yards, obviously another monster touchdown throw. Where do we go from here? There's so many angles we could go, but... Frankly speaking, let's start with the scheme maybe, and then go into Tanner Morgan in general. I'm going to say this: like, as much as people are mad about about Tanner Morgan, yes, he had some overthrows. Like, as someone who has thrown the ball a decent amount in football, it's a two-way street, everybody. And those Gopher receivers absolutely didn't help Tanner Morgan in spots. There were definitely some drops, and as a quarterback, that can be very frustrating. But Tanner was very, very inconsistent, Ryan.
The whole thing's broken. I don't know that there's a single aspect of Minnesota's passing game that you can say is working.
It's the Cole Kramer package. That's it.
You mean the two times they've thrown out of it where
yep.
it's been two touchdowns? Yeah, I guess. I mean, it starts with Sanford, but again, that's where I know a lot of you are finally going to be like, Ryan, you've seen the light, but I'm, like I wrote last night, I'm out on Tanner. He's seeing ghosts. He's not making throws. And I look at the three losses for Minnesota their last three losses, Bowling Green, Illinois, and now Iowa. And I look at a large part of the reason why Minnesota lost those games was the passing offense. And you look at Tanner statistically, and you remember watching those games, and Tanner wasn't good. And now they've lost two straight games, who are very winnable games, where you can look at this and say, if they just had a passing offense, and if they just had Tanner Morgan being able to complete some simple throws, you know, Minnesota could be in a much different spot with two games to go. And that's where, again, we've seen Sanford's track record with quarterbacks. I mean, I think it's been well documented. We've talked about it at length. We're going back to the Jordan Love days at Utah State. But there's no doubt that Tanner's regressed, and we're to a point now, and I said this to Derek last night, where part of the reason I'm out on Tanner now is, what's the point? You're essentially out of the Big Ten West race, unless Iowa falters immensely, and Again, you're able to do something against a Wisconsin defense that's probably the second best defense in the country behind Georgia right now. But with two games left, you're 6-4. You're essentially out of the West race. Tanner's not a part of next year's team. He's not a part of the, well, he could be. It's just like he's not the future of this position. And he struggled so much recently that it's why not give Zach Anikstad a shot? Because, and this is where I come back to, Luke, is you had a quarterback for Iowa and Alex Padilla making his first career start yesterday, and you had Tanner Morgan making his 36th. One of them had the trust of their head coach to continually dial up deep shots, continually going to the aerial attack, and one of them had 15 passing attempts going into the fourth quarter where Minnesota was just scared to throw the ball. And if you're just going to play scared to throw the ball, why is Tanner Morgan in start number 36 your quarterback at this point? I don't understand it. I know you wanted to go a little bit different way, but I got to rip off the Band-Aid for my own self. It doesn't make a lot of sense anymore. Derek, where are you on the whole Tanner Morgan thing right now?
Well, I just wanted to comment. I can answer that. I just wanted to make sure I just talked a second about schemes and strategy. I think two things were evident to me on the rewatch. First was that in the run game, Minnesota did not want to run into the teeth of the front seven in Iowa, which is why I think they brought the toss and the outside running, particularly when Iowa was in man coverage. And it was good to see that. So that, to me, was a deliberate strategy that we're not going to let the Iowa linebackers and strong safety run downhill against our running game. In the passing game, I really thought the strategy was to keep the ball away or out of the radius of the safeties. So if you notice, Minnesota chose up until halfway through the fourth quarter, chose not to challenge the safeties with anything deep over the middle, which when we get to the strategy part of the discussion overall in the game, I think is an okay way to approach the game. And then I think it's an okay game plan to start with. But as the game unfolds and the game script does what it does, and we'll get to this later, I think you needed to get to a point where you need to somehow come up with explosive gains. And I think that was missing. And as Ryan pointed out, and I agree with him, we have not seen that in the passing game. So this is the way I'll answer your question, Ryan. I think that you have to address the passing game one way or another. I think it's a fair option to make a change at the quarterback position because, quite frankly, I think all phases of the passing game are broken in my estimation. I think the route trees that are not working for the most part that are being asked. I don't think the wide receivers are playing well enough to win. There are times when they're open and the ball is maybe not perfect, but it's within the catch radius and they're dropping passes. There are other times where they're not getting separation. So I don't think you're good enough at the wide receiver position. And at the quarterback position, I definitely think, particularly against Iowa on Saturday, you didn't get a winning performance out of the quarterback position. And that means pre and post snap reads, and then also where you hit your spots. Sometimes you have a problem in one or the other of those phases. There were problems in both of those phases. I think at times Tanner was not identifying the right target with his pre and post snap reads. Other times he did identify the right target and the ball is either high or it's a little bit low or it's out of the catch radius. So you have to address it. So yes, I think it's a viable option to suggest a change of quarterback. A lot of people I think will come back and say, it's not going to happen for whatever reason. You know, they don't think Fleck will do it. Okay. If you don't do that, what I'm saying is you have to do something in the passing game to address that. So if you're not going to make a change at quarterback, I really think you have to change what you're asking the quarterback to do. I think you have to go back to a half field, two route read for Tanner on any given play. That doesn't mean only two players go out in a pass route. But what it means is get back to, you snap the ball, he takes a two-route read, he's able to look at half the field without turning his head, make a decision who he's going to throw it to, either throw the ball, scramble, or throw it away. That's it. He is not doing a good enough job on these long progressions, reading routes 3, 4, and potentially 5. It's just not working for him. Guys aren't open. He's not seeing it. At times they are open. He's not identifying it. You've got to change something.
So that's where, like, Luke, my question to you is this. This is a philosophical one for you. Mm-hmm. We've talked at length, and we will again on this podcast, about PJ Fleck, the risk-averse guru. What risk is there for PJ in just benching Tanner at this point? And what I mean by that is he just got a brand new 7-year deal. Minnesota's essentially now out of the West for 2021. What risk is there in just like coming out on Monday with the media and saying, Tanner's done a lot of good for the program. We're very thankful for him, but we're going to get a give, you know, Zach Anixter the shot the next 2 weeks because we're going to start to build towards 2022. Like, what risk is there to do that other than hurting the feelings of Tanner Morgan at this point?
I think the thing that maybe is at risk is he will go against his own mantra. You know, he frequently talks about, you know, he wants to give players a chance to respond, right? And I think at this point, Tanner, well, maybe not. I'm thinking about this live, so I apologize for thinking out loud, but he had a chance to respond against Illinois. He really didn't answer the bell in the Iowa game. He had a chance after Bowling Green. Kind of did against Purdue. I would say I probably argue that he did respond well against Purdue. So maybe there isn't anything for him to lose. I was thinking he might lose out on the fact that he always gives players a chance to respond. But, you know, maybe that ship has sailed at this juncture. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Derek?
Well, I think that the other thing I just wanted to, you know, to that point, everybody's really, and rightfully so, honed in on the Iowa game. Again, poor performance in the passing game in all phases. Again, Tanner didn't have a good game. But I really think when you go back and look at the season, even if you think back to some of our breakdown episodes of the wins, when we talked about the passing game, we used words like disconjointed, discombobulated, out of sync. So I think there's a case to be made that this hasn't been right all year. And yeah, there have been games that the Gophers have been able to win in to their credit because they've run the ball so well. There's been other games they've been able to win because it's an inferior opponent. There's been other games where you've controlled the time of possession and the defense has played, you know, if not lights out, really, really well, where you really didn't need much of anything out of the passing game. So with the exception of maybe a quarter or two in the Nebraska game, I don't know that this isn't a new problem in my estimation.
Here's where I want to go with this. And I get this is a little bit off topic from this being we're breaking down the Iowa game, but let's just look at Tanner as a whole, right? Let's go back to 2019. He really struggled in the non-conference, like really struggled, whether that was, we were talking about he was off target, whether it was pre-snap, post-snap, you know, getting happy feet, seeing ghosts, right? And then eventually, was the first game of the Purdue game in 2019 where he went absolutely lights out? They threw the ball a ton. Well,
yes.
Right.
Yes, he had the best game in Big Ten history. It was like 19 of 20 for 400 yards and 4 scores. But I'd argue back in the non-conference, we also saw him make some big throws.
Yes. Like
that throw to against Fresno State to Ottman Bell.
Yes.
Leading them back down against Georgia Southern and finding Tyler Johnson in the end zone. Like, he wasn't good, but then he certainly found his stride in Big Ten play in 2019, and that carried over and part of the reason Minnesota won 11 games.
But the point that I'm trying to make is I think we can't overlook the fact of the diversity of weapons he had, right? You know, two NFL guys, right, in Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman, maybe a fringe NFL guy in Chris Ottman Bell. I don't know if Chris Ottman Bell has an NFL future or not. I'm not a scout by any stretch of the imagination, but the point being, like, he had some really good weapons, and again, they also ran the ball incredibly well with Ibrahim, Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks at times, right? You know, how much of that was the parts around him being that much better, right? And now, I think you could argue the receiving core is a step down. And
oh my God, trust me, the receiving core is not immune from blame here.
Right.
Like, and just like the point I think you're trying to make, it's not just Tanner Morgan.
No.
And I know everybody wants to throw it all on Tanner Morgan, but that's where I think we can all agree. It's like, there needs to be a change. You know, whether that's Sanford, whether that's Tanner Morgan, whether it's both, but there needs to be something for tangible change here in the next 6 weeks before the end of the season. Because if not, by the way, look, I love our listeners, because you know what the quote was? I had tweeted at me, I think, 6 times last night.
No.
The famous non-Albert Einstein one, where the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Well, yes. Here we are again, same offensive coordinator, same quarterbacks coach, same quarterback, same passing game weapons, same routes, and it doesn't go well.
All right,
go for it.
I just want to switch a little bit and not quite get off offense, but I think we do have to focus a little bit on Mike Sanford here. I know you touched on it a little bit before, but you know, obviously there's regression at the quarterback. Let's just mostly focus on the pass game. He has found ways at times in the running game, and I think part of it is the success is coming largely from a very senior laden, you know, super senior laden offensive line, even without their top options at running back. But I struggle to understand whether or not he can put together a game plan in the passing game outside of Nebraska. Derek, think of one game where you felt positive about the passing game approach. Other than the first half in the Nebraska game, I can't come up with one.
Yeah. And it seems to be that not only within a game and within a strategy, but there should be things that you work out in the passing game. If you can find an advantage with the talent that you have, that you should be able to carry over game to game. So, you know, we keep going back to 2019. Maybe that's unfair because of the reasons you mentioned, Luke, with the NFL talent. But there were things that the Gophers did in the passing game, essentially in every game, where, you know, it didn't matter if how the defense approached it. Okay, you're going to take away one thing, it's going to open up something else. So I would say game to game, it tends to vary wildly. I mean, think back to the Colorado game where all they did was take deep shots. Now, maybe that's in some ways what the defense was giving you. That's okay, but you didn't have any sort of bread and butter. And in the game against Iowa, which I don't think we should let this go by without mentioning the fact that Iowa's defensive backfield is very good. So, again, I don't think it was a terrible strategy to try and keep the ball away from their safeties, at least for a good chunk of the game, because they're very good. But it comes to a point where you should be able to figure out something, and even if things aren't wide open, but something in the passing game that you do well that you can rely on and put the defense in a position where they have to choose to defend one thing or the other. And whatever you're giving up, that's what you take, or you're going to have to force the ball into tight coverage. So I would just end by saying kind of how you started, Luke, which is, you know, the passing game has been frustrating, particularly against Iowa, but all year long to some degree. What's even more frustrating is the way they've been able to figure out in the running game creative ways to run the ball. And yes, they've done just better executing the run. But even beside that, you know, you think about the Northwestern game. Northwestern knows you're going to run the ball. Northwestern isn't particularly good at stopping the run. But even so, you found many different creative ways to run the ball out of different blocking formations, different personnel. I don't know why that can't carry over to some degree in the passing game, where you try and break down what the defense is going to do and then put your personnel with either certain packages, certain route trees together to figure something out. And again, against a team like Iowa, you probably can't expect guys to be running wide open in the secondary, but there has to be something in there that you can rely on. And we just haven't seen that or any sort of consistency.
Isn't that the most wild part about this is how creative they are in the run game? Like these little nuanced things that is finding them success. Yet the passing game is just an abomination. And, you know, I think some of that, I hear the crowds and I hear the masses certainly, where it's, you know, how can Tanner read a defense when he's getting the play in with like 8 seconds left and he's screaming at the line, trying to get set? And how in the world is he, you know, he's getting the snap and he's immediately looking up. And I get that. I'm with that. I'm not going to disagree with you. I just think whatever this thing is in the pass game, and that's where, again, we're trying to find solutions. Yes, we're trying to be cathartic and we're just trying to vent. But that's where I'm looking at like the solutions here for the next 2 weeks. And it's like either whoever is drawing up the passing game designs amongst the staff between Sanford and Simon and whoever else, like, how about we switch things up? You know, like you got an 0-7 in the Big Ten Indiana team this upcoming weekend. And, you know, it's not going to be the greatest of defenses compared to what you have to face in 13 days. But again, try something different and stop trying to do these different things. And I mean, even some of the play calls, Luke, where it's like, all right, Luke, I'm transitioning into these receivers. It's just, if your name's not Chris Ottman Bell, when was the last time you saw a gopher receiver win a contested catch? Deafening silence is the whole point here. Like 4th and 17, and you're dialing up a deep shot contested 50-50 ball to Michael Brown Stevens. I don't know that I've ever seen him win a 50-50 ball. Daniel Jackson, it's just not there for him right now. Dalen Wright, everybody's favorite player in the entire world, is on the sidelines, played 4 snaps, and gets in on the final drive and can't even line up right. It's like, what happened at receiver? Like, you'll remember, Luke, back in the preview, that was my biggest worry about this team, was the amount of inexperienced talent that they had at wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, Ottman Bell missed a couple balls that you'd like to see him come down with, but Michael Brown Stevens drops a first down slant, drive stalls. Daniel Jackson drops a first down slant, it stalls. And when you're only throwing the ball limited times a game, all of these drops, and we continue to talk about it week after week after week, I mean, it comes back and it kills you, Luke. It just kills you. And that's where these receivers, they just need to be better.
Yeah. Well, there's no question the receivers need to be better, both, you know, from an execution and like as Derek alluded to, you know, and those balls are in your catch radius. You need to bring them in. And then there are a couple, you just got to catch them. They're right on you. Here's one thing we got to give some praise to. I mean, we noted already the play to Kokeef, dropping it over the top on the wide dump. That was a great schemed play. I guess this is where I'm a little bit confused. So Iowa bit super hard on that play. Very, very obvious. Then what, there's like 5 some minutes left and they go a slant and go with Chris Ottman Bell. Number 8, he had a really tough day. He got burned on both of those sneaking a look inside. But you know, Ottman Bell gets loose for 72 yards. By the way, that was a great ball by Tanner Morgan, basically hit him in stride. I guess what I'm curious, why didn't they dial those up? And Ryan, you happen to be there. So were they trying to dial them up and we just can't see it on TV? That's what I'm trying to get to, because they were there and they were cheating. I mean, they're cheating like they have, trying to get turnovers, and we had a couple.
I'm laughing because I think I know this one hits near and dear to Derek's heart. And I can't explain it, is the lack of aggressive play in the passing game just comes back down to EJ Flex saying, I don't want to turn the ball over and I don't want to challenge him deep. And it sucks because the 2 times you actually got creative in the passing game and you actually took shots, look at what happened. You scored 2 touchdowns on 2 attempts, yet the offensive coordinator and the head coach just, unless it was like 3rd and 17, they weren't going to dial it up. But Derek, I don't have an answer for Luke. I would have loved to have seen Minnesota play to win the football game, but I don't, like, against Illinois, there were a couple times where he just missed guys. And again, I was there in the press box in Kinnick. I didn't really see that on Saturday. And again, it's tough off the TV rewatch too. But again, I remember spending time on some of these where Tanner's just holding the ball and holding the ball and holding the ball. I didn't really see a ton of guys open, but Derek, I think there's also something to be said for just airing it out as well. And I want to let you have the floor.
Yeah, I guess where I'm at, and this, I guess, speaks to overall strategy of the game as well, is I want to say again, I don't think to begin the game, and maybe I don't think everybody's going to agree with me on this, and that's okay. But I believe to begin the game, and maybe even through the first half, I think it's okay to have a strategy whereby you do try and control the ball, play sound defense, take what you're given, and, you know, try and go into halftime with a lead. I'm okay with that. I know there were some shots, particularly at the end of the first half, that can be criticized, I think, fairly. But given how the game plays out, what you're left with is, and this goes back to, I think this is what you're talking about, Ryan, the frustration with playing a team like Iowa, Wisconsin, and to a lesser degree, Northwestern on the years where they're, you know, not as talent deficient as they were this year. The problem is if you're playing a tight game with them and trying to limit mistakes and you're back and forth and it's tight, you have two options. You either can wait for them to try and make mistakes and beat themselves, which they actually did twice by throwing the ball to Gopher defenders, which they dropped, interceptions. So those were really your two opportunities to capitalize outside of the fumble that was a good play by Justin Wally. But if you're not going to get, if they're not going to let the game go themselves, you have to create explosive plays. You have to win the game. It's okay to play it close for a while, but as you mentioned, Luke, you take a couple shots, and outside of, you know, late in the game, you throw the contested ball to Michael Brown Stevens, which again, you're trying to play from behind at that point. But while the game is tight, you take two shots and you hit them both. So why you don't go back to that and continue to do it, I don't have an answer for that. And I haven't for years. And frankly, at this point, I don't think it's going to change, guys. We've seen this philosophy and this is the way it's going to be played, and whether we like it or not, I don't think it's going to change. But lastly, I would just point this out to try and hit this home. If you look at the way Iowa approached the game, that 100%. Is essentially exactly what we have been asking for with, by the way, an unproven new quarterback. They had no problem taking shots. In fact, they didn't have any of the consistency that the Gophers had on the offensive side of the ball, but they realized that it was a tight game and that in order to win, they were going to have to take some risk and try to create some explosive plays, if for no other reason than they weren't getting the consistency out of the bread and butter plays. So a different approach for Iowa, but the same approach for Minnesota, and they came up short.
All right.
And until it changes, it's just, here you are, your 0-5 against Iowa in the Fleck tenure. And again, the more things change, the more things stay the same. Luke, I want to ask you both about a couple of specific offensive game time and situations. Okay. A couple of plays that I talked about in the GIF rewind that stand out to me. I wrote about them on Gopher Illustrated. You're more welcome to head on over there. And that's where it's first drive of the game. And I gift it. It's 3rd and 6. And the two options for Tanner Morgan here are either a go route, a fade along the sidelines, Dotman Bell, it's covered, or a delayed crosser to Brevin Spanford at the line of scrimmage. Luke, your thoughts?
This is the one where they threw it to Spanford for 3 yards, right? And was short of the line to gain.
He got 1 yard. He was also picked by the official.
Yeah.
Got right in his way. But thoughts on 3rd and 6, and the two routes are either a go ball or a line of scrimmage pass.
I didn't love the call. I don't have the all 22, so I can't see what the deep routes had, but I did not love the call. I understand what you're trying to do is clear space, but if memory serves, they're in man coverage on that play. So it wasn't going to happen anyway. I did not like the call.
Derek, I'll take you to the second drive of the game. Then Minnesota's got it 1st and 5, and they end up kicking a field goal. Why is that? Well, let's look at two plays. Number one, 2nd and 3, boot action. And Tanner, and I actually asked Tanner about this after the game, and I'll go on that Co-Keefe miss, you know, what was it? And he goes, Co was my 3rd read, and I was late getting there, and then I tried to force it in, and it didn't go. I know that you sent me a text about this play specifically. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'll answer it like this, Ryan, which just helps get to the last point I wanted to make sure I brought up, which is, I also would have loved to seen not necessarily more risk taken, but more of the, I don't like to call them trick plays, but gadget plays, unconventional plays, if you want to put it like that, because as Luke alluded to earlier, Iowa likes to take the ball away, particularly with their secondary. And again, cheat isn't probably the right word, but they like to jump routes. They like to play with their eyes and jump routes. Well, if you look at it, the fourth down call that you talked about, Ryan, they went cover zero. They cheated run. Cokeef gets an untouched touchdown catch to the end zone. Later in the game, they jump an Ottman Bell, which they had no business doing given the point, given the fact that they're up in the game. They jump an Ottman Bell slant or dig, and he gets the double move. He's wide open. He runs in the end zone for a touchdown. Now, bring it to the play you're talking about. The Gophers go play action, which is what we've been asking for, in particularly in short yardage goal line situations. He doesn't see Co early. He's open early. Iowa's able, they cheat run. So he comes up and he's open, but they're able to recover. But what I think, you know, I texted you, Ryan, is if you go back and rewatch the play, Kai Thomas on the, what would be a halfback throwback, is wide open in the end zone. Nobody is within 25 yards of him. Now that has to be a called play. That's not in Tanner's progression, but
right.
If you're breaking this down and saying, what did you do well and what could we have done more of? You have to come away as an offensive staff saying, why didn't we run more double moves, a flea flicker, a throwback, anything to get the defense, you know, taking the bait on something to hit them with something else. And again, they did it twice. They came away with two touchdowns. That was all we saw.
I have a question on that play because was it man coverage? Remind me quick. On the Cokeef one in the end zone, where he was apparently the second or third read.
Yes.
It was man coverage, yes. Right? I don't understand how,
yes.
I don't understand how he is the third read on that. Like,
I think it would have been Span Ford and then Ottman Bell potentially. But again, If his eyes are even looking at that general area, he's waving his arms, which is part of the reason why he didn't catch the ball.
Yeah.
He was waving his arms, and then Tanner threw him a 90-mile-an-hour fastball.
I have to agree with Luke because, I have to believe Tanner. I don't think he's lying to you, Ryan. Yeah. But if that play is going to be open, it's open immediately when they bite on the fake. So you should check that immediately, or at least, I mean – if it's your number three, it's your number three, but you better get to it quickly because what happened is exactly what's going to happen if they bite on the fake is they're going to collapse on the run. The moment they realize it's passed, they're going to bail and try to recover, which is what they were able to do.
On play action, you're literally taught, you know if they bite where guys are going to be open, and you know they're going to be open quick because they have a chance to crawl back, right? And to me, that's the first read, not the third read. But again, I don't know the play well enough, but that's surprising to me. I want to talk about a specific play, Ryan, and Derek, the 2-point conversion. How do you like that play? So Ottman Bell motions across. They basically try to run him under, right? And it was man coverage. And I think even if they complete it, I don't think he scores. Ryan, your thoughts?
Well, it wasn't going to get in there because the Iowa, I think, slot corner and whoever the title number 28 was, he read it and he was going to be right there. My issue with that whole thing is what were Daniel Jackson and Michael Brown Stevens doing?
Exactly.
I had one college coach text me and they go, Minnesota wouldn't have scored there anyway because their receivers didn't do anything to help the kid in motion. And I went back and I watched it and sure is... I mean, well, I don't know what they're doing there. Now, again, it's an incredibly well-timed blitz where Minnesota motions across Ottman Bell, and that Dane Belton blitzes off that side. The pass is batted, and it's no good. But even if Tanner gets that off, I don't think Ottman Bell, number one, got enough depth towards kind of the end zone there that if he can catch it and score. But I also don't know what Minnesota's receivers are doing to help out their guy there. Am I missing anything, Derek?
Well, it's a pick play or a rub route, and everything about Iowa's call on defense told you that they were defending the pick play from the blitz to the corner, which I'm not certain that was the – because he motioned from the backside, and so I believe that corner just jumped the route because he saw the pick route coming. So you have to give a little bit of credit to Iowa that they but the way that they called the defense was an anticipation of a pick route. Now, I can't say that that's – you know, unimaginative from the Gophers because there's only so many 2-point plays that you have. And a pick route or rub route is one of the very basic 2-point plays that everybody runs. But Iowa essentially guessed right on that play. So there was nothing that anyone could have done to make that play successful.
Okay.
I got some more.
Oh, you got more?
I have
40 plus minutes into the offensive segment so far, but keep it coming.
Well, there needs to be change, and we got to continue to be the cathartic Davenport of love here. And that's where I want to go back to that first series where again, the play after you miss Koki, you run left, and then Kai Thomas gets you to the two, and then you decide, even with the amount of, I mean, they were gashing Iowa on that specific drive. Iowa had not adjusted, mm-hmm. and they decided to kick the field goal. Fleck playing for the field goal to get the points. Interesting from this two
is,
there.
Yeah, this is the fourth and two, right? Mm-hmm. I actually don't hate this. I get that a lot of people do hate this. I'm going to speak out of both sides of my mouth here. I don't hate it because, you equalize it, you make sure you get points. I'm more of a, you got to take points inside the 30. But inside the five, I guess I could be willing to go for it. It's a tough situation. I criticized him last week for not taking the field goal at the 20 and going for it there, trying to get the touchdown. In this situation, giving the running success, given, you know, at this point, Iowa hasn't done a ton on offense. I know they do have a field goal. I guess I maybe would have gone for it.
All right, Derek, I want to set this one up for you. Minnesota gets an actual turnover at midfield. Justin Wally strips it out. They take over at the Iowa 46 with 4:17 left. Minnesota proceeds to run the ball eight straight times, including they have it second and three. Fleck uses his second timeout with 56 seconds left. They run left. They run middle. And Fleck doesn't. And here's what I'll set you up for is PJ said at halftime with Justin Guard that he didn't want to challenge that spot because he didn't want to use his final timeout. That tells me from the moment go, when you call eight straight run plays and you don't even ask for a measurement there, that you are playing for the field goal 100% and not even trying to be aggressive one bit. What are your thoughts on getting a turnover at midfield? It's a tie game, potential to get points before half. And they just essentially say, you know what? We're just going to run the ball eight straight times, including twice after their second timeout with 56 seconds left in the red zone. Your thoughts?
Well, a couple things. There is no doubt that they were playing for the field, like it or not, whether we disagree or not, they were playing for the field goal to go up 13-10 at halftime. And I will actually agree with Luke and say that I'm okay with the being a bit conservative in the first half and playing it close if you're going to come out in the second half ready to take shots when needed, which they didn't do. So in hindsight, I'm not okay with it because of the way that they played the rest of the game. But to your point, Ryan, I would say two things. The conservative play calling in field goal territory or at the border of field goal territory is not new to the Iowa game. It's been that way the whole year, and it's been frustrating the whole year. And I don't know, you know, you could make the argument against a really good defense. It makes a little more sense because you're trying to get points when you can get points, thinking that this might be low scoring. We got to get three where we can get three. But that really doesn't hold water because they've been doing that against every team. They get inside the 40-yard line and they do not throw the ball for the most part. They run the ball. So it was frustrating. The only other thing I would say, and this is an answer to the situation you just asked about, Ryan, but in the red zone in general, and particularly the goal line, if you're going to run the ball, I don't understand why they went away from the outside toss outside zone and went back to inside zone in those situations.
Yes.
You know, that you don't, if you want to keep Iowa out of running downhill in a box against your offensive front seven, you want to make them move east-west. You want to be unconventional and be creative. But all creativity seemed to be lost every time that they got inside field goal territory, where not only was it just run the ball, Ryan, as you pointed out, but it was back to we're going to run inside zone and traditional outside zone, maybe mix that in a little bit. And Iowa was able to just button down and tighten up and they had to settle for field goals every time.
Can I have a comment on this nine play drive that started off the turnover?
This is America. You can do whatever you want.
I was frustrated as you with you as well that they didn't at least throw the ball on this. I agree though with Derek. I'm okay with taking the field goal if you're willing to be more aggressive. The thing on the in the red zone that befuddles me is if you're not going to throw the ball, why do you have Tanner Morgan in the game? Like my understanding is he's your quarterback because you want him to be the one throwing the ball. You might as well just put in Cole Kramer at this point. Like you don't have to run, the read option, you know, for him, effectively the Wildcat. Like you can just have him in, hand the ball off. He can still throw the ball. Like I effectively wanted to know why, at least on the first field goal, that he didn't get a carry or even take the ball inside the five, right? That to me was a little bit befuddling because you might as well take the extra blocker in those situations if that's the way you're going to play it.
I don't know that I have a good answer for you. I hope you have a good answer for me on what was maybe the most frustrating call of the entire game. Is it's 16-17. Minnesota's got it 3rd and 6 at the Iowa 33, Luke. And
the swing pass.
They decide to throw a swing pass, a designed swing pass, 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage
to the short side of the field.
Loses 3 yards.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Because I can tell you, I'm sitting next to Chip Scoggins and Andy Greeter up there in the press box. And we all about lost our minds in terms of the mindset and just fear of potentially gaining yards with all these passes close to the line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage. A swing pass 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage on 3rd and 6 against Iowa. Thoughts?
I hated that call. That's it. Hated it.
Well, that brings me to the second part of what I talked about earlier, which is you play it close to the vest, you play it, you get some points, that's fine. But when the game is shaking out the way it had been, that's the point where you have to start taking some shots. And I believe PJ answered a question after the game that, well, you have to see the right coverages. If you can't just take a shot, well, yes, you can. There, if you're running enough guys in routes downfield, there is single coverage somewhere. Mm-hmm. Now, is there going to be somebody running wide open? No, and particularly against Iowa's secondary, you're rarely going to have that, other than the couple times we've already outlined. But you should be able to identify if you have enough guys in patterns. Somebody should be in single coverage. Maybe it's a contested catch. Maybe it's a back shoulder. Maybe it's you know, a fade or something where you throw low to the ground and a guy has to catch it as he's going to the ground. But there are, I know that's really against the nature of this offense, but I believe that was the time when you do have to start taking shots. And I don't think that was, even with the fact that Iowa played that play perfectly and snuffed it out, even besides that, I don't think it was the right call to begin with.
Okay, Ryan, question for you. How tall is Brevin Spanford? 6'7"?
Say at least 6'6".
6'6"? Okay. Were those safeties in an advantageous position to try and run him up the seam?
Keep going with where you're going. I like where this is heading.
I guess for me, it's not a risk-averse play to run him up the seam on a safety, and you can and if you airmail it over because of how aggressive they play their safeties, that's not risky play. I know that they're leading the Big Ten in interceptions, right? Or at least were. I guess to me, on that 3rd and 6 or any of these kind of situations, if you run it, throw it high, you know, maybe you miss high, but it's not gonna get picked off. That's not a risky play to me. Maybe others disagree with that, but the coverage a couple times screamed to me, you know, some sort of just run a tight end up the seam. And for as athletic and tall as Brevin Spanford and as good as an athlete as he is, I was shocked that they didn't try and take that approach, because that would be my approach against Iowa. Again, this being a guy that directs engineering and not calls football plays for a living. But I thought, you know, that is an opportunity you have there against them.
Yeah, and the only thing I would add to that, Luke, is in that situation, you're down close to the red zone. But in any situation like that, they did make it, I think, a concerted decision to not challenge the safeties. Right. But the problem with not stretching, I guess what I'm going to agree with you on is if you do try and stretch the field, which they didn't the whole game, because that was a decision they made. But if you try and stretch the field with, you could go four seams, right, and pick somebody in single coverage, it at least gives that look. And then in theory would hopefully open up some of these routes they are trying to complete. So, you know, it's kind of the foul ball analogy, like, okay, exactly. let's take a shot up the seam, even if it's incomplete, even if we overthrow them, heck, you can even tell Tanner, look, if it's not totally there, throw it high so that it's either caught or nothing, and at least make them think about it. At least make the safeties think twice about coming downhill, trying to crash down on the dig or slant route or crossing route over the middle.
All right, Ryan.
The only other thing, I there's only just like one more thing, and that would just be, we've spent now, I'm sure, way too long, and Luke's going to yell at me after this episode. And
no, you're fine.
It's just there's stuff that needs to change, and it's simple enough to change. You know, whether that's taking Tanner out and putting Zach in and seeing if it doesn't improve in the passing game, maybe it is not the quarterback and maybe it is Sanford, and then you know he's got to go. Just there needs to be change in some aspect over the final 2 weeks of the season. And I brought this point up to Derek last night as I was driving. And I come back to this whole risk averse PJ Fleck thing, which by the way, my fiance thinks it's the wildest thing in the world that arguably one of the most outgoing personalities in college football has the mindset of Luke's favorite coach, Bernie Bierman, where he just plays to not lose. And the point I'm getting long winded to here is I come back to this. What's the risk of changing your quarterback when you got a brand new 7-year deal and the fan base would literally be absolutely tickled to death if you just show them something new and they will be fully on board with it. So you'd have, again, they're not going to make the change because the fans are on board with it, but you need to change something. And the easiest thing for the next 2 weeks is the quarterback. There's no risk really for me for this move because of where you're at this point of the season. Am I just ludicrous for thinking all of this? Again, I'm new to this whole change the quarterback bandwagon thing, so excuse me, but am I just insane here?
No, I think you've laid this out pretty well. I don't think it's crazy. You're like you said, you're not in a position probably to win the West. Theoretically, on paper, you have an opportunity. But Maybe we have to look at ourselves, guys. We've been doing this podcast for the better part of 5 years, back into the Jerry Kill days, and we've ever basically asked for the offense is to take more risk. So maybe we're doing something wrong. I don't know. That's, if you've listened all this time and you've heard again and again and again us say, "Hey, take more risk." Sorry, it's the same episode over and over.
Yeah, the only thing I would say, Luke, is to that point, that's kind of where I'm at, which is, We've particularly in these rivalry games, we've called for this, and I don't see it happening. And I don't like to read too much into post game press conferences, and you know that's right after the game. The coaches haven't seen the film, but if you are going to read something into it, I don't think it's going to change. I don't think they're going to decide to take more risks. So then what you're back to is you have to play perfect in every phase, which maybe is a transition to the defense, Luke, but you weren't perfect, and it's really difficult to out mistake free Iowa, Northwestern, and Wisconsin. This is what they do, and I don't think it's any coincidence that in all of the games against Wisconsin and Iowa in the PJ Fleck era, the only win they've gotten is the game where the Wisconsin quarterback threw multiple interceptions.
Once again, the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, these events are fun, right? So we go to these tailgates. We get an opportunity to socialize with other Gopher fans. You make friends. Like my son has made friends with you. My 2-year-old son has made friends with
somehow.
You. Somehow. It might be the fact that you're willing to just let him drink his orange juice and pound his French toast. But generally speaking, my son's got an opportunity to meet you, become your friend, because you both share this love of Gopher football together.
We do, and we both enjoy French toast together. But that's where I feel like we've said it for months now. Luke and I are at every single one of these. We have talked to so many of you that are actually come up to us and be like, oh, you guys are actually here, and you actually will talk to us. Yeah. Yeah, we will. I mean, I'm going to be there. I'm guessing the Wisconsin game will be an afternoon kick. I will be there drinking an adult beverage right next to you, trying to enjoy the day. And I would imagine that because it is going to be late November, from someone who spends a lot of time outside, look outside right now where you currently are, and probably in Minnesota, there's probably snow on the ground. You want to go tailgate in the snow? You want to get all cold before the game? Or do you want to come hang out with us at Williams Arena in unlimited beverages, adult beverages, Tony's Diner? It's a fantastic time for 3 hours up all the way until kick. So if you want to learn more, go to goallineclub.org/events.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the defense here. I got to be honest, guys. I came away from this game a little frustrated. Defensively, shocking. This kind of become my identity in covering this team. On the day the Gophers give up 27 points to an Iowa team that had come in, I think, averaging close to just around 20. I don't remember off the top of my head.
They had scored 31 total points in their last 3 weeks coming up to this game.
It not good. And I'll be honest, like Padilla maybe gave them a little bit of a spark, but he wasn't amazing. He was 11 of 24 for 206, but in certain plays, he was able to make them. The Gophers absolutely stopped the run. On 25 carries, they gave up 71 yards, but the problem ended up being the explosive plays that they gave up. They gave up one to Charlie Jones. Well, actually two to Charlie Jones. And then basically the missed tackle on Keegan Johnson that resulted in a touchdown. Otherwise this defense played really well and they forced a turnover, but then it's a list of missed opportunities for this defense. And again, and again, and again, we said they had to force turnovers. They were able to do that once. But otherwise it just felt like so close to playing the right game, defensively, but just gave up too many big plays when you just couldn't give up big plays against a really inefficient offense, Ryan.
It's like you read my piece on Gopher Illustrated after the game.
I didn't.
You're so...
I have two kids.
You're just like... No, you're not. It's all right, though.
It's okay.
That's what I wrote, is missed opportunities. You have first drive of the game. Alex Padilla rifles one right between the 5 and the 5 to Mariano Sorry-Marin. Can't hold it in. Can't corral it. And Iowa gets 3 points. Justin Wally, late third quarter, has it thrown right to him. He sees it coming. He makes a play on the ball. Can't corral it. Say Minnesota gets both of those interceptions that are literally thrown directly to them. You get 3 points off the board because Iowa's kicker makes a 50-yarder, which is a novel concept for Minnesota special teams. And if Justin Wally catches it, Minnesota's at the 26. Even if they have a Big Ten-esque 3-play negative 2-yard scoring drive, it's like a 45-yard field goal. Well, you take 3 points off of Iowa, you put 3 points onto Minnesota, and I can tell you what the scoreboard looks like, and I think a lot more people would be happy. But it's the explosive plays on the other side of it. Is Iowa had 3 explosive plays, and they led to 3 touchdowns. Minnesota's offense didn't have enough explosive plays, and they didn't lead to enough touchdowns. And that's where you look at Justin Wally gets bit on the out and up, and 72-yard score. Novel concept, first play of a drive. You can take a deep shot. Didn't know that was legal in the upper Midwest here from what we've seen from Minnesota's passing offense. You see Charlie Jones make an incredible catch off play action, a diving one. Iowa scores a couple plays later. And then the inexcusable one of the night is Iowa goes to a tunnel screen. Coney Durr has Keegan Johnson dead to rights. And between him and Thomas Rush, they don't get him to the ground. Tyler Newbin, the play side safety, sucks into the middle because he doesn't believe that somehow Keegan's going to escape from that. He gets down the sidelines, and instead of a negative 3 yard loss, it's a touchdown. Just too many missed opportunities for this defense. Too many explosive plays. And if you're going to beat Iowa, Luke, you need to come away with those interceptions that are literally thrown directly to you. You just have to.
Yeah, for sure. Can we just, Derek, let's just quickly go through those explosive plays again. So you've got the out and up from Charlie Jones, right? Well, we can basically equal that with the one from Chris Ottman-Bell with basically a slant and go. So we're basically even, right? That wipe those two out. You've got the Y dump to Co-Keefe, and you've got the Charlie Jones diving grab. By the way, amazing pitch and catch, because at that point, Alex Padilla had absolutely airmailed a couple that weren't even close, arguably could have been intercepted. And basically the difference in this game is a missed tackle explosive play for a touchdown. That's what it feels like to me when you're trying to separate these two teams.
You're correct in terms of execution, but what I would say is that Iowa, without having the play-by-play in front of me, probably took another half a dozen shots, where Minnesota did not. So from a percentage standpoint, one could actually say Minnesota converted a higher percent of shots, but Iowa did not hesitate to take shots and try and stretch the defense because of the fact that Minnesota was not going to let them get any consistency with their running game. I mean, I do want to acknowledge, I really thought that the Gophers defensive line, like the offensive line, rebounded and had a very physical game. Trill Carter in particular was particularly in the first half, had a very good game, very physical against an All-American center. And the guards also, against Iowa, they like to run a lot of zone. They brought the physicality, and there were times, early in the game, they got a couple in there, but essentially wouldn't let Iowa get consistent with their running game. But as we just outlined, Iowa had no problem taking shots, almost one or more on every series, to try and just play the numbers and say, we need a number of at bats here. If we're going to bat 300, we got to take 10 shots in order to hit three of them. And that's what they did. So, I mean, for me, I would say that if you look at this game, you could go either way on defense. I don't think they played well enough to win. And the reason why I think that is because if you're going to play at that risk averse on offense, you've got to hold Iowa to under 20 points on defense. Normally you could say 24, 28 points. That's kind of your ceiling you want to be at for a defense in a quote unquote normal game. If you're going to play that risk averse on offense, you've got to hold them under 20 points. And they didn't do that. And is that asking a lot of your defense? Yes, it is. But if that's the way you're going to play on offense, then that's what you're going to have to ask your defense to do. So, again, took away the consistency, but the big plays hurt them. And I would also add that in the second half, as we saw in I believe the Illinois game as well, a couple of disappointing runs on third down to keep the Iowa offense on the field when they needed to, when they needed to turn them over and have them punt the ball. So just not enough plays and too many given up on the Gophers defense.
I feel like we've been a little bit, obviously we've kind of been more on the negative side of things, but trying to, talk about the realities of this team. One thing I do want to say that I thought the Gophers did a really good job of adjusting on defense is early in the game, Sam Laporta was absolutely killing them. He ended up with only three catches in there only in the first half. They were able to, unless he got injured, Ryan, they were able to neutralize him. That was definitely an improvement because he was absolutely killing them in the first half. I was impressed with the change they made there because he was a key target very early for Padilla, and he never had a reception after, I think, what was it, like the... It was like the second quarter, I think, somewhere early in the second quarter. But a good adjustment there because tight ends has absolutely killed Minnesota from Iowa in the past.
I'm with you. And again, it just comes back down to like they adjusted, but then they were just not consistent enough. And it was, as Joe Rossi would say, and he says every single week with the media, his number one thing he stresses to his defense is the details. And the details, the air quote details, weren't good enough. Too many missed tackles, too many missed assignments, and that's how you look up at the end of the day in an Iowa offense that hadn't exactly been prolific is able to put up 24 points. I'm going to take three of it off of the defense considering the weird end of game Kirk Ferentz sequence where that's a whole different kind of
Do you think he felt bad about the timeouts and that's why he didn't punch it in?
No, you talked about like he just wanted to drain the it was strange. Like
it was super strange.
Comes back to win that game and Iowa doesn't try to score three times from within the five. It's a interesting talking point, I can assure you, in Cedar Rapids there. But I think, like, again, we talk about this game, and it's like Minnesota wins the total yards by 130. They win time of possession 40 to 20. They win the turnover battle, and they still lost. Mm-hmm. It's just like you hope that this is just one of those games where Fleck finally looks in the mirror and says something needs to change. And you know, Minnesota, I will say this, Luke, and I said this to Derek last night, whether it was the offensive line or the defensive line, I felt like Minnesota for the first time in maybe in my 11 years of covering them, maybe back in that blowout Max Williams game, other than that, it would be like, this is the first time I think Minnesota actually legitimately won in the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you want to go all hashtag silver linings on it, I mean, at least there's that question mark. I don't know.
So,
but like even Trill Carter, to, I forget which one of you guys said it, but like the interior of Minnesota's D line did better than the ends, which is something I wasn't projecting coming into it. But it was just a complete team effort to essentially hold Iowa's running game to 71 yards. But again, it was the explosive passing plays that just killed them.
I never question players being hurt or not being hurt, except I'm going to question whether or not Petras is injured, because at one point Iowa claimed that Tanner Morgan did not get hurt in a game there. So I feel comfortable saying this. This was a brilliant move by them going away from Petras and going to Padilla, hurt or not, because the mobility really helped them. I think that this would have been a much more difficult game for Iowa had Petras played, given his inability to scramble. Padilla, obviously much more mobile, somewhat to a certain extent neutralized Minnesota's pass rush and ends. They didn't end up with a sack. So kudos again there to the coaching staff for making that change, because it's what they needed. Now, Padilla wasn't amazing. He was 11 of 24 for 206 yards. Yeah, he had two touchdowns, but he only executed on a couple, you know, a handful of plays. Probably should have had a couple picks, but it was just enough for them to win. And at the end of the day, that's the difference in the game. I think if Petras plays this game, I think we win flat out. I just think that it's a better fit for Minnesota from a matchup perspective. I don't know what you think, Derek.
Yeah, I think I don't have much to add. Minnesota wasn't able to throw the ball consistently when they needed to. Iowa wasn't able to throw it consistently, but they got enough out of their other big plays. I think making that switch was huge. And schematically, if you caught it during the telecast, I believe one of the sideline reporters talked about the coaching staff saying to Padilla, you're going to have chances. The reason they said that is they know that Minnesota was taking away the run. They were loading the box. They had Justice Harris in there. They had a little more of Flip Dixon. And they were good. There was going to be more man coverage on the outside, which I think was right from a strategy perspective with a new quarterback. But it's a credit to him. He made enough plays. And Iowa coaching staff, as good as they are, they recognized it immediately and knew that where we're going to get our plays this game, it's going to be out of the passing game, and it's going to be by taking shots.
Once again, it's time for Gopher Math, that part of the show where Ryan reads off a random math equation that involves, you know, some Gopher statistics. You do it and you have a chance to win 2 months of GLC. But before we do that, Ryan, if you have to pay taxes, which if basically you earn any money in the United States, you're going to have to pay taxes, make sure that you reach out to Ayers Rock Planning, because number one, it's important that you have a plan for your taxes and make sure that it's personalized for you. And that's what Ayers Rock Planning can do. They can come to you and bring you a personalized plan for you to save money on your taxes. They're not going to do anything under the table. They're going to follow the tax code as is and take advantage of the opportunities that are there. So if you want an opportunity to save money on your taxes because you have kids going to college, you may be selling a business, etc., 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 reach out to Ayers Rock Planning at ayersrockplan.com, as well as Ayers Rock Plans on Twitter. Slide into the DMs, find them on their website. So, Ryan, what is that Gopher Math question for this week?
It's a very simple one. And again, 2 free months of GI are on the line. I will begin to talk next week about what is going to be an outstanding promo coming up here for Black Friday. But again, 2 free months of GI gets you all the way essentially into the next semester, January, mid-January. So it seems like an awesome time, especially with signing day somehow like 4 weeks away now. So this week's Gopher Math question is, tell me the difference between Iowa's offensive yards per play against Minnesota minus the Bucky Irving yards per carry. Again, it is Iowa's yards per play on offense against Minnesota just on Saturday minus Bucky Irving yards per carry. It is a whole number. First one to tweet it to at Ayers Rock Plans, at Ryan Burns MN, and at Gopher 80 with the hashtag Gopher Math gets 2 free months of Gopher Illustrated with signing day just around the corner.
All right, let's talk a little bit of special teams here. In this game, generally speaking, one of the great highlights for this Gopher team was the fact that they were excellent in kick coverage. I can't think of a time that they actually got it out beyond the 25. If they did, it was maybe the 26, but a couple times inside the 20, Kesich didn't absolutely bomb every single one through the back of the end zone, so you have to play coverage. I thought that, Derek, this kick coverage was really, really good this game.
Yeah, that was a very pleasant surprise. We don't have the benefit of the all 22, and you guys can laugh at me if you want, but it would be interesting to take a look at that and see if Minnesota changed their approach to kick coverage, because it didn't look like Iowa, who I believe has had a pretty successful kick return unit, they were not ready whatsoever for Minnesota's kick coverage on any of the attempts. As you mentioned, Luke, several times pinned inside the 20-yard line. So whether that was a schematic change in the way that they were covering it, or whether they just out executed Iowa or a combination of the two, I'm not sure, but that was a very pleasant surprise. Iowa got nothing out of their kick return.
All right, Ryan, I'll let you go on your soapbox, because from there, I mean, Matthew Trickett responded quite well, 3 for 3, 100% on his field goals. His long was 31. He made his lone extra point. He ended up with 10 points on the day. But I imagine you are going to want to talk a little bit about the blocked field goal. And for me, was a 53 or 54 yarder, right?
I think it was 53.
Okay. So having kicked a little bit, I know how difficult it is. The further you get back, you have to be able to get the ball in the air. That didn't happen for Dragan Kesich. I haven't seen Dragan's kickoff, but Ryan, would you say it's pretty high, or does it tend to be pretty low? Because he's good at driving it, but if you can't get it into the air, you're not going to have much more of an advantage trying to kick a long field goal.
You know, I thought I was going to talk about a lot of things today, but the launch angle of Dragan Kesich's field goal or kickoffs versus his field goals was certainly not on the list for me. I mean, either way, I get the point you're trying to make. It's just that field goal never had a chance because it barely got over the helmet of Brady Weeks, the long snapper.
Right.
And it damn near hit Logan Lee in the face mask. That thing was way too low. And I don't put anything really on Dragan Kesich.
I don't either. I mean,
what? And the reason why is why are you throwing Dragan Kesich in the fourth quarter in November in a rivalry game for his first career field goal attempt from 53 yards? Have I seen Dragan Kesich hit from 50 plus? Yeah, I saw it in fall camp. But why are you throwing? I mean, we come back to the whole Brock Walker situation the last time Minnesota was in Kinnick, 2019. Why are you throwing Brock Walker out there for a 50-something yard field goal? And shockingly, it doesn't go well. I mean, what is the possible thought process there is beyond me. But I mean, other than another blocked field goal where Minnesota doesn't get points, to your point, Matthew Trickett responded. The coverage teams were good. But, I mean, round and round and round we go again chasing our tails with, Luke, you tell me which special teams helped them win the game and which one didn't.
I think the lone differentiation is, well,
is the 50-yard field goal.
Yeah, it's a 50-yard field goal. And Torrey Taylor was better, but we knew he was better coming in. But Mark Crawford wasn't terrible. But I mean, statistically, it doesn't look great, but he did all right. Given
he wasn't 36 average with one inside the 20. Does that get you going?
I'm trying to think.
It's just this. I mean, here and then with where Derek's at with like giving up about talking about the offense, there is one facet of special teams I'm just done talking about after this. I don't understand Brock Anikstad on punt return. And it's not even a punt return. Minnesota goes punt safe. Brock Anikstad lines up 10 yards too deep, and then he just spends 15 yards waving his hands where he could have just caught it and it cost Minnesota field position. I don't understand what the hell they're doing on punt return. I just have no idea for the life of me. So I'm just going to be done talking about it. So Luke, I'll ask you again, which special teams helped you win the game and which didn't?
Yes. I will concede that Iowa special teams absolutely was the difference here. And you know, this is something that they're always good at, right? You always know that they're going to bring it on special teams, and Minnesota wasn't able to match them or exceed them in special teams. Yeah, just didn't happen. Derek, any parting thoughts on special teams?
No, I would just agree that, you know, I played at Kinnick Stadium. I don't think it was the right call to kick a 50-some yarder at Kinnick in late November, the weather being what it was, and outdoors. I know they hit a 50-yarder, but that's their home field, and there's low percent chance there. And I know I'll be accused of 20/20 hindsight, but I don't think that was the right decision.
Ryan, other than taxes, the only thing that is guaranteed in life is that you probably should have some insurance, because things might go wrong. And if you're on the other side without insurance, you might be in a bit of a pickle. So if you are looking to change insurance, save money on insurance, or you just need to be insured, period, who should we reach out to, Ryan?
You should reach out to the Burn Insurance Agency and local man here in Oakdale, Minnesota, because as Luke said, if we've seen anything in the last 24 months or even looking at this Gopher football season in general, it's been a year of unexpected and challenging events. And one of the things you need to be able to count on is having the right protection and having an insurance agent on your side. And that's where the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father, Bill Burns, a gigantic Gopher fan, is the company to help with life's unexpected events. Whether that's an auto accident, a broken water pipe at your home or business, a crash with your out on the St. Croix River with your boat, the Burge Insurance Agency will have you covered. And that's where he, as an independent insurance agent, has access to over 20 different insurance companies to shop for the best coverage at the best price. So if you're one of those big name brand companies, and you want to make sure that you're getting the best coverage at the best price with someone who actually cares for you, let the Burns Insurance Agency do the insurance shopping for you this year. You can email him at bill@insurancebyburns.com for a free quote, or check out their website at insurancebyburns.com.
Okay, taking a look around the Big Ten, we obviously talked about this Iowa 27-22 victory over Minnesota in quite some detail. Let's jump into the remainder of the Big Ten games. Who was surprised that Ohio State had put up 42 on Purdue before the half ended, Ryan?
Hope you took the over in this game.
No kidding.
Sweet Moses of Mary. Jiminy Crickets, they scored 90 points. And look at the quarterbacks in this game. C.J. Stroud completes 31 of 38 for 361 yards and 5 touchdowns. Aiden O'Connell goes nuclear, 390 yards and 4 touchdowns. I mean, it was just points galore out there in Columbus, but no shocking that the Boilermakers couldn't play Spoilermakers yet again.
I don't know if you got a chance to watch this game. That was really
Derek,
bad.
I heard the muted laugh, and I appreciate you laughing at my dad joke.
Derek, I don't know if you got a chance to listen to this game, you could have listened to it, but watch this game at all. I think Ohio State is rounding out into form once again, and they are frighteningly skilled in the wide receiver room.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that really jumped out to me, and I'll want to make this comment. I'll make it one more time, and then I'll let it go because it's probably starting to annoy people at this point. But you and I, Luke, have talked about many, many times, again, to the point of annoying people, that the teams playing well or peaking in November are typically the teams that end up being the most successful on the year. And really, if you go back over the, I don't have the history in front of me, but if you go back since the East-West Big Ten divisions were formed, it's more often than not been Ohio State playing Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. I don't think it's a coincidence that at this current moment, and talking about this game, Ohio State played against Purdue, and then I'm sure we'll get to Wisconsin's game, the two teams that are playing the best and peaking in November, clearly, I don't think it's even arguable, are Ohio State and Wisconsin.
Yeah. Man, things just tend to stay the same. Boy, we'd like to see them change, but obviously that's not the case here in 2021. It just feels like Ohio State is in a position right now, you know, with a freshman quarterback and all those playmakers on the outside and then in the running back room as well. Like, they're in a position to be pretty dangerous if they can get by Michigan State this next week, and they'll more than likely be in the college football playoff. And man, if I was any of those teams, I'd really like to see Ohio State and Georgia match up. Georgia's defense is absolutely elite against an Ohio State offense, which is just legitimately off the charts, Ryan.
I like how you've just completely conceded that Michigan's not going to beat them. You know, they got two top seven teams at the end of the year.
I know, but that's kind of what I want to see, but I know they've got two top 10 games. I just think Ohio State is just on another level relative to these other teams. And I know they have to play the games because I think Michigan's better than Michigan State, but alas, we know the outcome of that game.
Well, if you ask the College Football Playoff Committee, even though Michigan State beat Michigan 2 weeks ago, that's a whole different conundrum. But again, Ohio State's playing really well, shocking no one.
All right, let's maybe talk again about Michigan State. They had a 40-21 victory against Maryland. This Maryland team, the Gophers beat, is 5-5 on the year. They still might find a way into a bowl game, but they did lose to Michigan on this day. Got down early in that first half and weren't able to crawl back. Tagovailoa had a good game at 29-48 for 350 yards and two touchdowns. But again, the story of Michigan State is Kenneth Walker, 30 carries, 143 yards and two touchdowns. You know, Michigan State obviously playing well. They're the number 7 team in the country. Did we talk a little bit about the fact that their coach just signed an extension, Ryan? Did we talk about it in the preview?
We did not. If you want to go for it.
Well, yeah, he signed an extension. The details I don't have in front of me at the moment, but they more or less locked him up. Doesn't look like he'll end up at LSU or USC. He, I think, is in the top 5 in salary. So good for them that they found a way to lock him up. And I think really good for the Big Ten in general, because a good Michigan State is good for Big Ten football, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, credit to their athletic director for getting that done, working with his agent on who's essentially, I think, the hottest coach in America. That's maybe, maybe there's Ryan, you might know of a couple other names that are up there, but good job getting him locked down. This game was interesting insofar as Maryland seems to be, you know, they go as Talia Tagovailoa goes. If he can get loose and run around and make plays, they do well. And the interesting thing about this one, as you pointed out with the stats, Luke, is he did do that, but they just couldn't come up with enough on defense. I mean, once Michigan State got on track with their running game, particularly in the second half, they just piled it on and ended up pulling away. So, you know, Maryland's going to have to, you know, they're in a position where if they want to make a bowl game, they've got to put together some semblance of a defense against these better teams, because I think they have, even with the injuries they've suffered, they still do have some talent on offense to be able to make some plays and score points, but they've got to be able to stop people in order to get to a bowl game.
I should clarify that the rumors are they're close to locking that down. They haven't actually locked that down yet. I looked on your website, Ryan. It's 247sports.com. They're close. I'm sorry if I inaccurately reported that and got people a little bit excited there that Mel Tucker will be staying. I guess it's not quite a done deal yet. Any comments on the Michigan State game, Ryan? Otherwise, we'll give you the floor on Michigan and Penn State, a 21-17 victory for Michigan. This was very close, much like the spread, which ended up being one at one point. And basically a late score for Michigan put them over the top and gave them the victory. I do want to talk a little bit about Sean Clifford here, but again, Michigan is rolling 9-1 overall and 6-1 in the Big Ten, Ryan.
You doubted the running game for Penn State. You doubted them.
I did.
On 42 carries for 109 yards, yes. Which is absolutely cancer. But again, that fourth quarter was fun to watch. We saw some of it in the press box up in Iowa City there. And so again, turnovers played a huge role in that fourth quarter. Michigan being able to get that stand to force Penn State to a field goal to keep it to only make it 17-14. And then Eric All being able to tiptoe along the sidelines there for the go-ahead score. And it was a good, obviously a really good game.
One thing I do want to mention here, think back to that 2019 victory for the Gophers over Penn State. If you were a betting person after that game, would you have taken Sean Clifford or Tanner Morgan as your quarterback to start a team around, Ryan?
I know what you're going for, and sweet Moses of Mary, isn't it funny how things change from time to time here with opinions on and how just more data that comes in. One was kind of an aberration and one wasn't.
Yeah, I didn't want anything to do with Sean Clifford after that game and even the rest of that season, but man, as he found a way to turn his career around, he ended up being 23 of 43 on the day. He is basically, he is the lifeblood that is Penn State football right now because they really can't run the football. But man, what a difference a year or two makes. And boy, just imagine if he hadn't been injured, how much better maybe he could be playing. But kudos to him for turning that around. He's playing some really, really good football. Any comments on that game, Derek?
Well, I also think it's even more what you said is it's more profound because, as you pointed out, Penn State's not able to run the ball. And the number of hits that he took in that game against Michigan, yes, throwing the ball. I mean, yes, he has Jahan Dotson. He has talent at wide receiver. But, boy, whatever he's done in the passing game, when you consider he doesn't have a run game to balance it out, so the defense is obviously keying on pass, and the pass protection wasn't clean. I mean, he in that game or even previously, and I know the announcers noted it, but the fact that he was standing by the end of that game was a miracle. I think it's maybe cliche and maybe gets overused a little bit in football, but I would, in this case, a gritty, tough performance by the Penn State team just in general. They just fought the whole game, and in particular, Sean Clifford, I have to give him credit.
Okay, let's two more games left. Number 18, Wisconsin, wins at home against Northwestern. They did give up a late touchdown that ended the shutout, but a game where...
The funniest part about that is the 7 points that Northwestern scored, it was a fumble recovery touchdown.
Yes.
So it wasn't even against the defense for Wisconsin.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, again, this Wisconsin defense against a very malign Northwestern offense was once again elite. And frankly, their offense, the Wisconsin offense, seems to be playing better. Graham Mertz still isn't without some faults. And did Braylon Allen get hurt in this game? I think I saw.
Yes, he got nicked up. I don't know if he came back or not.
He did come back.
Okay, yeah. I saw.
They're not without Ches Malusi for the rest of the season,
yes,
who was their starting tailback. So they have the big bruiser that is Braylon Allen here. And 25 carries, 173 yards, and 3 scores. And to Derek's point, Minnesota peaked in October. Wisconsin is really finding their stride. Just the defense is just suffocating everyone. Now, again, we saw Northwestern's offense. I mean, they're dreadful. But the amount of turnovers that Wisconsin is forcing now, I mean, it's 4 turnovers they forced against Northwestern. I think they've forced multiple turnovers in many of their recent games, and that offense has been able to capitalize in a lot of short fields.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Graham Mertz has definitely played better. He still finds ways to turn the ball over. I would like to see, I would like to see them against a better defense, but generally speaking, they definitely are. They are improving on offense, and again, their defense is just elite. There's just no question about it. They're kind of in a class on their own, with maybe the lone exception being Georgia that can compete with them on defense. So, let's take a look at the Rutgers Indiana game. Who had Rutgers putting up 38 points first and foremost? Either of you guys?
Did you know that Indiana was a 7-point favorite?
Yes, I did. I talked about that with you.
And that's where, take a guess. So Rutgers scores 38 points in the day. Guess how many total yards they had?
Oh, I don't even have this open. I'll go with 275.
Okay. Derek, again, they scored 38 points. How many total yards?
Went short because I figured that this is a trick question. I haven't looked it up.
Okay. 450.
320. They forced Indiana's offense had 6 turnovers. 6. They lost 4 fumbles, which I've never even heard of before. And they threw 2 picks. And, by the way, Indiana had 3 different quarterbacks, Minnesota's next opponent. They had 3 different quarterbacks throw double-digit passes in this game. So, Godspeed Joe Rossi trying to figure out who the hell's going to play quarterback for the Hoosiers. But it's that offense is sputtering for Indiana, and that's the big issue for them. Is I think they thought they were going to be a defensive-led team, and now I look at the last 6 games for them, and they have not. And I think it's just to the point for them now is I think they're just so run down on defense because their offense has been so bad that they're just getting grinded into a pulp at this point, which, again, I think Minnesota is going to find some ways to run the ball next week. Rutgers ran for 218 yards and 5 touchdowns yesterday. So Minnesota's obviously got to show up, but this Indiana offense is just, it's not good. It is not good at all. And again, anytime you just had 6 turnovers that you gave away, because Luke, I look at these scoring drives, like third quarter, 1 play, 10-yard touchdown, third quarter touchdown for Rutgers, 4 plays, 39 yards. 53-yard scoring drive. Again, if you give a Big Ten offense enough short fields, they're going to be able to turn it mm-hmm. into enough points. So Minnesota's got to be able to go to Bloomington next week and get their 7th win of the season.
All right, so I guess that's going to wrap up this episode. Well, do you guys have any parting thoughts? I should give you an opportunity for some parting thoughts.
Damn well know we do. Derek, you take the floor first.
Oh, go ahead, Ryan.
I just hope that this week is full of change. It's changing something with the passing game because it needs to change, whether that's the head coach allowing the offensive coordinator dial up more deep shots, whether that's the offensive coordinator and his passing routes getting guys more open, whether that's the receivers actually being able to win contested catches, whether that's a change at quarterback. There needs to be something resembling change because this offense, in terms of a passing offense, resembles the service academies. And 2 years ago, it was one of the most explosive passing offenses in the country. And now here you are less than 2 years later, and we spent an hour on the offense and specifically the passing offense. So I hope that when next time Minnesota plays against Indiana in 6 days, there's either a change of quarterback, which, as I said, I'm fully on board with. Maybe there's some different bodies at receiver. Maybe there's some changes in the route trees. Something in there. Because, again, if the offensive line and defensive line come to play the next 2 weeks, you should absolutely beat Indiana, of which I think Minnesota opens as a 5-point road favorite from what I saw in Bloomington there. And, again, Wisconsin's peaking. Wisconsin's defense is fantastic. But you need to change something in the passing game going forward. And I hope that PJ Fleck takes a long look in the mirror, and we can talk about, and we have at length for years now, about the risk-averse style of his team. PJ, there's no risk to making some changes on that 7-year deal, and I hope, and I really hope that the head football coach is willing to make a change here late in the season.
Derek?
I would just close by saying I agree with Ryan that they need to address something in the passing game. What that is, I don't know what they'll choose to do, but there is a case to be made that they may not need it against Indiana. If, as Ryan pointed out, if the offensive and defensive lines play as well as they did against Iowa, and as well as they've played, you know, at the times they've been up, they probably win the game with another 15 or 20 less, or 20 or less passes. So they can probably get away with it once again. But there is no scenario outside of Graham Mertz throwing 5 interceptions. There is no scenario that I can be imagined that you're not going to need something out of your passing game against Wisconsin. So I think, I said last week that there may not be any bad teams in the Big Ten. I think Indiana's a bad team. I think it's fair to say that at this point. So they'll probably come and try and use the same game plan, the same approach, and they'll probably win if things go their way. But if they don't play well up front, as they did not against Bowling Green and Illinois, you're going to need something out of the passing game. If you don't need it against Indiana, you will need it against Wisconsin.
Yeah, so just to close, my thoughts are we often hear PJ Fleck talk about that you need to change your best. And frankly speaking, at this point in the season and going forward in 2022, it's time for the Gophers to change their best. What that looks like, I'm not sure, but I'm here for it. Again, we want to thank all of you for listening. We want to thank our sponsors, the Goal Line Club, Ayers Rock Planning, and the Burns Insurance Agency. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.